This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Good Monday morning, everybody. Sports Radio 610. It's good to be with you. Sean Bajani and Seth Payne. Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast, who will be back, I would presume, Seth, tomorrow morning.
As long as he didn't get beat up in Pittsburgh.
Oh man, I did not know that's where he went.
He was at the Steelers game. Yeah,
I was gonna say.
I was dialed in on the Steelers game yesterday, so I could share the experience with him.
I was too. I was dialed in to everything NFL yesterday, especially so. It's getting late, and these games are getting bigger. They mean more. They're getting more exciting, and well. You know, at least for the Kansas City Chiefs, it's like more of the same. This is just incredible what they have done and what they are doing over the course of the last month and change.
It's the, how many straight one possession games is it now that they've had? It's a record 15th straight one possession game, which extends the longest streak in NFL history. They won it with the fourth field goal kicker they've used this year,
yeah.
With a doinker. Right off the goalposts, and yeah, there you have it. That's the one. Like a lot of these one possession games that the Chiefs keep winning, I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, they're like the Astros. They get into crunch time, and they have so much experience, and Pat Mahomes is so good in the clutch that there you go. And yet, some of those, it just seems like the football gods are just the preordaining this. You got various field goal clickers doinking it in, and it just feels like we're all screwed.
It does. You know, when the kicker's doing that sort of thing, and that's the fate, and, you know, listening to Mike Tirico last night on the call where, you know, they're showing the replay over and over again as they're kind of doing the game recap, and he's just constantly like, you know that goalpost, it's about as wide as a dollar bill. Like, that's how close it was. this thing could have gone a lot of different ways. And he described it about three different ways to Sunday. And I'm just like, you know, that's just it. But people are going to gloss over a little bit. Like, okay, it came down to a 31-yard chip shot doinker for their ninth straight AFC West title. But it was also the drive before where, hey, Pat Mahomes had to get him down there again. And give them the opportunity. And so that's the part where, as much as people are going to say and have been saying already about this Kansas City Chiefs team, like, well, they look very gettable, and we're going to talk about that later, just how gettable maybe they are, particularly for a Texans team that's going to face them here in a couple of weeks. That's the respect you have to continue to give them, though. As many mistakes as they've made along the way, as many close games as they've played in where maybe you feel like they shouldn't have been so close, they're still winning and putting themselves in position. And that, to me, is the mark of a very dangerous team again.
Well, and I think if you watch Pat Mahomes in that game, he was under pressure all day long. Like, I mean, that's the frustrating thing about the Chiefs is you can look at the Chiefs and make any number of excuses for your own team. Mm-hmm. You know, we've done it with CJ all year long where you say, well, look, CJ's numbers are pretty comparable to Pat Mahomes in a lot of ways. CJ's thrown fewer interceptions, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same thing we saw with Brady for all those years in with the Patriots. It's, all right, the fourth quarter is a different game. It's just it's like a completely new football game almost like if at the end of the third quarter, everybody could go in and watch film for like 6 hours, figure out what happened in the first three quarters, and then go out and act on it. the Patriots do that, or excuse me, the Chiefs do that just as the Patriots in it on the fly. Yeah. And it, like, they might as well have had an 8-hour film session in the locker room, because they figured you out and they know what they can and can't do. And Mahomes was under as much pressure as he's been all season. He got rid of the ball the second fastest he has all year. And it just, they figured it out. That second game that you play in the fourth quarter, you're up against a much tougher opponent, because they've learned more than you, and they're more capable than you.
I was laughing at you just a second ago from the Freudian slip of the New England Patriots, because, well, that was like the creme de la creme for, you know, two decades plus with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And of course, like, they're always going to be the team that you reference for doing great things and doing the little things. And now that that has gone away and retired, it is Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs to point to.
And I wasn't watching closely enough. Do you know what Hopkins' injury was, and is it considered serious?
I do not, actually. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I meant to check on that this morning.
We're all ignorant this morning, everybody. This is where you came for your up to date DeAndre Hopkins injury news. You're SOL, everybody.
Yeah, we'll find something. But I would presume, like anything with some sort of finality, we're not going to know until a little bit later on this afternoon. You know how these things kind of go with the injuries. But that was just one of the things. And the last thing, you know, that's what I went to bed to last night, was another Kansas City Chiefs dramatic win. But it was just an incredible week, Seth, in the world of sports. I mean, you think about not even the weekend, just the last 24 hours. Just another wild and crazy slate of games in the NFL. The Chiefs putting the nightcap on it last night. But you had Baseball Hall of Fame announcements, with Dick Allen and Dave Parker getting announced by the ERA committee that they're going to be in Cooperstown later on this summer. And a historical hot stove coming to a head with Juan Soto and this just ridiculous contract that he's signing with the New York Mets come down last night.
Yeah, Mets. Just spend it, Mets.
Unbelievable.
I'm cool with the Mets spending. I'm cool with the... For different reasons than I'm cool with the Angels spending. The Angels, it always feels like, all right, well, we'll see what you do with this after you squandered the best baseball player of a generation. They've had two generational talents in a row and done nothing with them. The Mets, it doesn't concern us as much. Right?
No, it doesn't.
Like, you just keep it out of this league and we're okay. I don't have to worry about it. We'll see him, we'll see him once a year at least, but that's about it.
But look, Patrick Creighton is an Astros guy, an Astros fan. I could say that. However, his allegiance hails from New York, and so
he's a Mets guy.
He's also a damn Mets guy, so I'm gonna have to live with that crap.
I respect Mets fans. Mets fans have taken it on like they know what they've done to themselves. I appreciate anybody who just chooses to buck the Yankees and not take the easy choice if you grow up in the New York area.
But you know what? This is just another example of like up against it and financially irresponsible as they were. This organization, just like 2 years ago when they bought everybody and they had Scherzer and they had Verlander and they went on this wild spending spree that offseason to only start the year off like absolutely horrible, one of the worst teams in baseball, to tear it down to here we are again. They give the richest contract in pro sports history out to Juan Soto, 15 years. God bless America. $785 million with escalators, Seth, that could make it an $800 million contract.
I think the Here biggest thing, and I don't want to get into a big salary cap or luxury tax conversation. It's at 6:08 a.m. on a Monday. But I mean, it's the biggest problem with baseball compared to football is that football, hey, look, okay, the Detroit Lions are the darlings of the league. The Kansas City Chiefs are the best team. They have been the best team for going on a decade. And the salary cap helps in that regard. Like, it's undeniable. And baseball is probably never going to get it. But look, Stephen Cohen is a multi-billionaire who loves to collect nice things, whether it be art or baseball players. And it just doesn't matter how much money he spends. If he's willing to spend the money, then he can continually do all that. Whereas, okay, Jim Crane is going to be, he's not as rich as Stephen Cohen. If he wants to have a more competitive baseball team, he has to go out and work harder at his core business.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to accuse him of not working hard enough. I'm sure he works plenty hard at his core business.
He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. If you'd like to be a part of the show this morning, hit us up, 713-572-4610, 572-4610. You can call or text the 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610. It is a Texans game week. We've got a short show. This is what drives me crazy. I just told you about great weekends, great sports weekends like this. Is Monday morning, you come in and you only have a couple hours to try to sift through as much as possible. And you have to sit on a lot of these thoughts, a lot of the things that excite you. But this is a big day for the Houston Texans. It's a big week because there's no more off days. It's boom. You got to this point. You had the bye week, and maybe you tried to figure some things out. We're going to hear from head coach DeMeco Ryans later on today. He'll address the media at 12:15 about the upcoming Miami game, which, look, they're coming off of a victory yesterday over the New York Jets and Aaron Rodgers. We'll talk a little bit about that one, Seth, but I'm kind of interested in hearing what DeMeco has to say today in what kind of tone this press conference is, because I feel like coming off of that Aziz Alshire debacle and, you know, everything that was this past week that we've discussed, and I'm sure we'll continue to do so, this press conference today can kind of set the tone for the week and exactly who this Texans team over the course of the next month plus is going to try to be, who they need to be.
Right, and I would say it seems almost the last couple of weeks leading into the bye, I hate to body language read too much, because it's fraught with peril. You know, you just read your own biases into it. And yet, it did feel to me like in press conferences and by their play on the field, the Texans were running on fumes in a lot of ways. I don't want to make excuses for the Titans game or anything else, but it just, the late bye week, for the first time in my life watching and playing in the NFL, I really cared about the bye week this year. Because, man, having a late bye week really seems to have started to take its toll versus the Texans those last couple weeks. So, for one, you know how distance runners will taper off a couple weeks leading into a big race? I feel like, okay, this bye week could be kind of like tapering off. I treated it like that myself, Sean. I upped my carb intake. I tried to stay off my feet.
Yeah.
You try to just top off the energy reserves for what's going to be an endurance event. It's come Sunday, you've got 11 days to play 3 football games versus 3 very competitive football teams, 2 of which are the best in the league, but 3 very competitive football teams. Yeah, I just hope we get a re-enlivened and reinvigorated Texans team that they're still going to have all the same problems they had going into it.
Yeah,
but I need juice, man. I need juice.
Yeah,
Alshire's incident may ultimately, in a lot of ways, have kind of helped in a couple of regards. One, maybe it's something to rally around and focus on.
Yes.
You know, like free Aziz and all that. But two, it did shift all the attention away from Bobby Slowick and from all these other things that we've been wringing our hands out over for the last few weeks.
Yeah, it shifted the attention, but we're going to go right back to that if, in fact, come Sunday afternoon at NRG, there's not at least somewhat of a discernible difference in terms of what we're watching from this Houston Texans team offensively and defensively, for that matter, on the field against the Miami Dolphins. We'll talk about that when we return. 713-572-4610. If you want to be a part of the show, you can hit us up on Twitter as well. Follow Seth at Seth C. Payne on Twitter, at Sean Bajani for myself. What do we have to fear from the Miami Dolphins? That and more next at Sports Radio 610.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
In for Sean Pendergast this morning, I'm Sean Bajani along with Seth Payne. Got you till 8 o'clock this morning before we turn things over to Texans Radio. They'll get you set for a big game week coming up. course, Week 15, Texans and Dolphins at NRG. The Dolphins, Seth, coming off of a victory yesterday against Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets, 32-26. That was an overtime game. And, well, at least for some, who would have thunk it, right? The Fins looked literally dead in the water at a couple of different points yesterday. And I saw this on Twitter from Cody Stutes. And it drove me crazy immediately because I was checking into that game. Because, of course, you know, Texans play the Fins this upcoming weekend. And before we get into, you know, what kind of concerns you and intrigues you really about this game, Texans and Dolphins, I saw this tweet. And this was at 2:13 yesterday afternoon. And I think this is probably around the time of the game where the Fins at the time were losing 26-23 in the fourth quarter. This is a tweet from Cody Stutes. Quote, the Dolphins could be close to opening the can of quit on the season if they lose to the Jets. It would be nice to have a downtrodden Dolphins team come to NRG Stadium next week for that game. And I just saw downtrodden. And I saw it like there's plenty of football left to be played at the time. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, I hate this mentality. It drives me freaking crazy. For people that have this mentality, here's where my mind went. You're telling me like the Jets right now aren't a downtrodden team. They're playing in a competitive game against a team that is fighting for their playoff lives as we speak at the time during that game. And it's the NFL and they've got the quarterback. And, you know, did you not just watch or are you watching the Panthers and Eagles right now? I mean, the Eagles were 14 points favorites yesterday. And they went down to the final possession and damn near lost. We could get to that one a little bit later on. That could have cost some individual in Kentucky a lot of money, but didn't. But that's just where my mind went. It's the NFL. You can't count anybody out. It doesn't matter what your record is. At this stage of the season still, especially for the Dolphins, they've got a lot to play for.
Well, even if the Dolphins had lost yesterday, as it stands right now, I think they still would have been the second team out of the playoffs. So, and they would have been one game behind the Colts still. So right now they're tied with the Colts at 6-7, but the Colts have the whatever tiebreaker it would be.
Yeah.
So yeah, for one, just strictly on the standing side of things, it's not like the Dolphins would be out of it. I think the other thing is yes, it's the NFL, and we've already known, like, nobody's ever going to just count a team out in any given Sunday just because they're out of the playoffs. But B, they'd be in the playoffs, and the difference with the Dolphins this year has been so stark between Tua and not Tua. They've been a horrendous offense without Tua Tagovailoa. In a lot of regards, they've been like a top five offense when they do have Tua Tagovailoa.
Not shocking. So,
yeah, for the players that might let go of the rope or what have you. It's different when you know you've got your quarterback. If you're out there and you're playing with Davis Mills or you're playing with just some guy that you know is not the guy for the future, sure, perhaps maybe then there's a little bit more the distraughtness or what have you.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have thought, oh, okay, the Dolphins, if they had lost this game, I wouldn't have thought, oh, okay, well, this will be an easy one coming in. We've learned this from the Texans. You have zero hope based on a team being out of the playoffs. The Titans' playoff percentage probability and everything had nothing to do with the Texans losing that game.
Right. Boy, Davis Mills catching a stray at 6:25 this morning.
I'm sorry, Davis Mills. It is what it is. Dang it.
Love it. So what do we have to fear from the Miami Dolphins? I know you've got a couple of thoughts on this, Seth, but here's where I'm at right now. In terms of this Dolphins team, I'm looking at a squad that could be coming into NRG with some renewed confidence this upcoming weekend. And the reason is, you are what you've done here lately. That's the momentum you're trying to build and carry over. And look, this was their first overtime game as an organization in almost 5 years. Now, the guys playing for the Dolphins right now don't give a rip about that. They don't care. That's just a little interesting stat nugget for us. But when you're coming off of a 32-26 victory, no matter who it is against, the fact that you did it in the fashion you did in overtime, one possession, 8 plays, 70 yards, and you go down and you win a football game with that said quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa, that's a huge boost. I think, for a team that is, again, literally fighting for their playoff lives.
Yeah, I think if you look at the way they're constructed, the reason that the Dolphins make me really nervous is that, look, they have Tyreek Hill, they have Jaylen Waddle, mm-hmm. they haven't had incredible seasons or anything. Just go back to everything we said about with Tua. But Jonnu Smith, the tight end who ended up winning the game-sealing touchdown in overtime, he's basically got the same receiving numbers as both Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. They're all within 100 yards of each other on total receiving. They've all got between 11 and 13 yards per catch. Jonnu Smith has 5 touchdowns. Tyreek Hill has 5 touchdowns. But the Jonnu Smith factor in his ability, like he did on that final touchdown, to catch stuff underneath and across the middle because everybody's fixated on Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. That's a big concern for the Texans when you're down Azeez Alshire, when you've had to shuffle up your safeties. It was a safety that got beat by Jonnu Smith on that final play.
Yeah.
And that's where it just the Texans have struggled with that kind of stuff all year long defensively, even though they've been, you know, very good defensively. I'm extra concerned about it this week, that it's when Tua can get rid of the ball as quickly as he does, and when he does have that option to throw to a tight end, to throw to a running back, that's what the Texans, I think, are really susceptible to right now. So they've really just got to be nails everywhere else.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to as well with Devon Achane. You know, 6 catches, 45 yards yesterday. Tua getting rid of the football, you know, quickly. He threw it 47 times yesterday. And, you know, look, Achane didn't have a very good game rushing the ball. But when you're able to just kind of get him in space, that's what we try to talk about a lot around here with Joe Mixon, and what we'd like to see the Texans do a little bit more is, instead of just being so hell-bent on running the football with the guy, get him out into space, throw him the ball a little bit. Now that you don't have Azeez Alshire, do you worry about that from a defensive perspective, you know, from the Texans, like, where, okay, look, yeah, you've got Tyreek Hill and you've got Jaylen Waddle, you got Jonnu Smith, all these guys, weapons as pass catchers. You also have Achane as well.
Yeah, right. And I think that's where the one big thing that the Texans are lagging on defensively that's maybe the biggest disappointment for me is that they're not tackling well. And too many of the big plays are not just because of coverage gaffes, but because of poor tackling. And that's exactly where the Dolphins can get you, is getting rid of the ball quickly and then a guy having some space to run, getting yardage after the catch. You've got to worry about that from all those guys, but especially, obviously, Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. So without Azeez Alshire, I think what I really get nervous about is the potential snowball effect. If a team's out there and they're running tempo against you, or they're just peppering you with so many pass attempts, you got to keep everybody on the right page and together. And then especially with the RPO game, that puts a lot of stress on linebackers. That takes a real heady linebacker that can get the reads, understand whether they're supposed to be in coverage or coming up and playing the run. And that's really hard to do. Christian Harris coming back could help in a lot of regards, but I'm still nervous about just having the guy that's the signal caller being in complete and total control. And if that has to be Neville Hewitt, or if it has to be Henry Toa, that part just, it's not the same as obviously having Azeez Alshire.
It was noticeable to me when Alshire missed those 3 weeks earlier this season, week 7 through 9. Texans were 1-2 during that stretch. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that Colts win was bookended by the loss to the Packers, close game, and a loss to the Jets. And, you know, look, Neville Hewitt, Jake Hansen, there is reason for optimism, at least from my perspective, that now that you're having to go through this other stretch towards the end of the season without your linebacker, another leader on the field in Alshire, I got some confidence in that. You know what, Hansen and Hewitt and Henry Toa, who's playing better ball now, they can step in and fill that void. But this is the biggest stretch of the season. This is what you've had circled on your schedule all year long. When Alshire came back, Seth, one of the biggest differences that I thought anybody could tell if you watch this team with regularity is pre-snap, being in position, the communication, comfortability that guys have when both Jimmy Ward and Aziz Alshire are on the football field together. It's just a different beast for the Texans defensively.
Yeah, and I think that maybe one of the things you're going to see from the more from the Texans is maybe a more aggressive play calling. And D'Amico's done that this year. He's been a lot more aggressive than I thought he would be.
Yeah.
When you have Kamari Lassiter and Derek Stingley, it's a lot easier to do that. They take care of a lot of the issues on the backside. So I think that, I mean, if you look at the linebackers right now, they've got athletes all over the place, especially if Christian Harris comes back. And you add Devin White into the mix, who's been, Devin White's been a lot of what he's been his entire career is, my gosh, he is fast. He can be an impact player, but you can't quite trust him to be in the right spot all the time. And I think D'Amico is going to look at that and think, all right, well, it is what it is. I don't know if I can trust these guys to sit back and play base defense and just go through their reads and always be in the right spot. So we're just going to blitz the crap out of teams.
Yeah.
And it's boom or bust, but if we can trust the cornerbacks to hold up long enough, and if we can trust the blitz and the pass rush to get there, we could make some really big high impact plays with these athletes we've got.
Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast this morning. You know, looking at the other side of the ball, because that's where a lot of the attention, I think, is naturally going to go this week going into this game against the Dolphins, who will be at NRG on Sunday, is from the Texans' offensive standpoint. Okay, you're coming off of this bye week. There were some things that clearly needed to be addressed, and you've had the time to do so now. You can put it into practice this week on the practice field. Are there one to three things maybe that you had in your mind that you felt like the Texans absolutely could, we know they needed to address a lot, but actually could address, and that we might be able to evidently see on Sunday that's evidence of change?
I think the biggest thing that I'd like to see is that maybe they figured out a couple things in the run game, and the one big glaring difference in the Texans and how they're running the football really has been, okay, how physical is the defensive line they're facing? Because I think the Texans offensive line has done a better job on the mental side of things. They look like they actually know who they're supposed to be blocking. That's a big step forward for both Pop Warner football teams and the Houston Texans is, hey, know who you're supposed to block. So good job there. But it's not like they're all of a sudden road graders in that they can just drive guys off the ball. So it really comes down to, all right, picking and choosing who are you gonna pick on? Who's the weak link on the opposing defensive line, and how can you get that guy exploited? Because I think Laremy Tunsil does a great job in the run game versus finesse players.
Yeah.
He doesn't do so hot versus big physical strapping dudes. And that's where you got to single out and figure. And some of this comes back on C.J. Stroud on understanding and conducting, hey, where are we attacking in the run game? How can I check the play at the line of the scrimmage, and when should I, based on what I'm seeing? I just hope I see a smoother operation in that regard. And I like pick and choose your battles and figure out who you can actually physically handle on any given Sunday.
Yeah. We'll get to more of the Texans coming up a little bit later on in the show. We've got you till 8 o'clock this morning. Up next, though, after a wild and very busy weekend in sports, we'll get you caught up with it all in headlines. It's next. Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast, along with Seth Payne at Sports Radio 610. Keep it here.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, time for headlines. It's Payne and Pendergast in for Sean Pendergast. I'm Sean Bajani. We'll start with a little local flavor first. The Rockets, Seth, last night in action against the LA Clippers, and won 117-106. It was good for them to get off a little two-game skid and get back on the winning track, as they'd been doing a lot of here recently to start the season. Now 16-8. The Rockets rolling with no Tari Eason last night, who, if you remember, against the Sacramento Kings the other night, that was the game in which both Ime Udoka and Alperen Şengün were ejected in the fourth quarter. I don't know that we'd seen Ime that heated before, and the cameras were glued on those guys while Tari Eason was going at it with a fan, though luckily for the fan and really for Eason and the Rockets, not able to make it to the fan had to be held back from charging into the stands and going after him. I just got a number of texts this morning. Hey, by the way, where's Tari Eason? Did he actually go into the stands and punch a guy like Vernon Maxwell? No, he didn't. Yeah. Thankfully, he did not.
We didn't. There was no malice at the whatever they're called, the stadium there these days. Yeah.
That was
so the Clippers. By the way, the Clippers had won 9 out of 10 at home coming into this game.
I thought
they shot as well as they ever have. They're 48% shooting on the night, and Udoka kind of. I thought it was a really good job early in the third quarter of reining everything back in where. They came out sloppy. Udoka calls an angry timeout, and then they only commit one more turnover the rest of the game after they started off super sloppy and were coughing the ball up at the beginning of the second half. But after after their last game, where there was one of their worst shooting performances of the year, this team that hangs its hat on their defense came out, and they shot the lights out.
They did, and they killed it on the boards last night. Massive advantage, 50-37 on the boards. And you mentioned the shooting. Nearly 49% from the field. They hit 15 of their 41 threes last night. Jalen Green, he was on, especially early. 31 points, that was a team high. The Rockets put 6 players in double digits, all 5 of the starters. Amen Thompson got the start last night. Played the most minutes out of anybody. 39 minutes for Amen. That dude is so freaking awesome and fun to watch. He finished with 22 points and 8 boards. A couple of double-doubles for Jabari Smith and Alperen Şengün. The Rockets will be back in action on Wednesday when they take on Golden State. That'll be a little bit of a rematch. Not sure. We'll have to keep an eye out to see if Steph Curry, Draymond Green are going to be playing in that game. They did not play this past week when the Rockets failed to take care of business without those two guys. One of their two losses this past week, one to Golden State and one to Sacramento. We'll see if the Rockets, Seth, can get back on track on Wednesday. How about this? I don't know how you're feeling about the first ever 12-team college football playoff, but it's set. The first round is ready to roll after it was announced yesterday. You got undefeated Oregon earning the number one overall seed. No surprise there in the first 12-team college football playoff. And you've got Georgia, Boise State, Arizona State rounding out your top four seeds with first round buys. What'd you think of the committee selections?
I'm cool with them all. I don't generally get all that angry about college football playoff committee seedings, especially when there's 12 teams. I guess my scrappy underdog story is Georgia, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
The way they fought their way back this season from skepticism and whatnot. But like I say that tongue in cheek, obviously. And yet, like Gunnar Stockton.
Oh my gosh, what a game!
I mean, Gunnar Stockton took one of the. That was one of the most vicious hits I've ever seen.
Yes,
I don't know if I've ever seen a person go from upright to horizontal that quickly.
He
It skipped the frame. It was just he was standing up and then all of a sudden he was on the ground.
Yeah.
To get a first down in the red zone.
It was almost one of those situations. Great work by the camera guys, you know, on that broadcast, because I mean, Gunnar Stockton is making a beeline for the end zone. And it's almost like, you know, in baseball, when a ball is hit, it's usually a Fox broadcast because those camera guys suck. And, you know, there's a high fly ball, and it's usually on Joe Buck call. He thinks it's a home run, and it's not a home run. And, you know, the camera just pans real quick to the stands and then back to the outfielder who makes the easy catch. It was, boy, you had to be on your game to stop the camera when Gunnar Stockton literally got stuck in his tracks and bent backwards. Helmet flies off. Dude gets right up, puts his helmet on, thinks he's going to stay in the game, gets ready for the next play. It's like, no, big dog, you got to sit this one out. And it was, they said it during the broadcast, you know, it's like a movie script, you know, unraveling here. Beck, who was, you know, bounced out of the game earlier with dead arm, basically a shoulder injury, comes out there with his arm hanging. And everybody in the stadium knows all this guy can do is hand the ball off and they still score.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he should have slid, obviously, Gunnar Stockton. That's a safe way to do it, I suppose.
Oh, is it now?
yeah. That's what they all say. Yeah. You should slide whenever you get to that point. Yeah.
He didn't need no stinking slide. How about this, man? Mets and Juan Soto. This was the story that was just huge coming down the pipe last night late. 15 years, $765 million to the New York Mets, Juan Soto. I think landing exactly where everybody thought he was going to land because, well, they've got more money than anybody else these days. It's the largest deal in pro sports history. Yes, including soccer.
My first reaction was, okay, good. It's not in the AL. This is going to be an interesting side story every now and then when you face the Mets. But then my second realization was, oh, yeah. Yankees fans are going to be miserable about that. And the first Yankees fan I sought out delivered about as well as any Yankees fan has ever delivered. This is an angry Yankees fan outside of Citi Field with a message for Juan Soto.
Yo, Juan Soto, listen up, man. This is your new f***ing home. This is your new home right here. Shut the f*** up and don't f***ing complain. Look at this hole. Look at this f***ing hall. Right across the street. Look at this f***ing dump. Road f***ing closed. You chose this piece of to be your home for the next 15 f***ing years because you're a money-hungry f***ing you. You. Every Yankee fan should burn you f***ing jersey. You, Juan Soto. My f***ing you too, Scott Boras.
That is job, not Ben. That is not Nick Turturro.
But Thanks, Ben. I sent that to Ben, and he got all those beeps in. Good job.
Yeah, hell of a job there.
That feels good. Yeah, give me $765 million guaranteed, ooh, and you can call me a money grub all you want.
Exactly.
You can talk about how my workplace isn't as beautiful as apparently the Bronx is. I've been to Yankee Stadium. It's not like you're like, ooh, I want to set up camp. Can I just live in a tent right here outside the stadium? It's so beautiful. Yankees Stadium, the new one and the old one, is perpetually one of the most overrated stadiums. So I don't get it.
It's kind of like maybe there's a little bit of Rocky flair here for Juan Soto. You know, it's like he's got the money, he's got the contract, he's got the status, all of the stuff, right? But hey, he's going to stick to his roots. You know, when he goes to work during the day, he's going to Queens, damn it. You know, he's going to be kind of slumming it. You know, it didn't have to be walking into marble floors and marble walls at the new Yankee Stadium. It's, yeah, I'll go play at this dump Citi Field, apparently, and be just fine because I get to go home with my $800 million.
If he just lives off his per diem, even after taxes up in New York, I calculated it out this morning, with a conservative investment growth strategy, he would likely be a billionaire in about 13 years. So that's his,
off of per diem.
If he just lives off the per diem, which is really big in baseball. They get nice per diems.
Yeah. We'll see. Good luck to him. By the way, the biggest thing for me contractually in this is there's reportedly no deferred money. So the New York Mets, while they're stuck paying Bobby Bonilla till I'm like 60 years old, will not be paying Juan Soto at that age, at least as of right now, unless they rework his deal at some point.
This is the biggest contract in pro sports history, including soccer.
Yeah,
just like anywhere in the world, nobody's ever gotten this much guaranteed
money. Never. Never. Yeah. Insane. And soccer would be the one. That's like, yeah, but, you know, guys like David Beckham and stuff like that have gotten ridiculous deals over the years. No, this is $51 million average annual value, total monies included. Biggest deal in pro sports history. A quick nod and shout out to a couple of guys that predated us, Seth. Dave Parker and Dick Allen, selected by the Classic Baseball Era Committee. They'll be Hall of Famers and inducted next summer. And we'll find out if a little H-Town flavor is going to go in as well. Billy Wagner up for election as well this year. Coming up next, we'll roll into the 7 o'clock hour. Are you ready to bury this situation, or is it really just beginning? That's next at Sports Radio 610.